When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Let's ride.
Time for the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium. Take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger Baseball.
What's up, Dodger fans? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Incline Dodgers podcast, All-Star Break edition. Kevin Klein speaking. We're presented by TickPick and FanSided. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are 56-41. We're going to dive into how shitty the Dodgers have played as of late, but let's start on a high note because we just had the All-Star game yesterday evening, Tuesday, July 16th. We're recording on July 17th. For those that care. And the National League once again lost to the American League. So that's what, 13 out of 14 years that the Angels lost?
A tale as old as time, Kevin.
But at least it doesn't dictate World Series home field advantage anymore. So we got that going. But anyways, the American League won 5-3. I will let Jake Reiner share his thoughts on the All-Star game because I don't really care about the All-Star game that much, to be honest. But there was some good news if you're a Shohei Ohtani fan, because he's the only one that really did anything offensively for the National League. Hit a three-run home run, put the National League up 3-0, hit it off Red Sox pitcher Tanner Houck, who we're going to actually see potentially coming up soon because the Dodgers begin the second half with the Red Sox at home. But anyways, Shohei Ohtani, the first Dodgers player to hit a home run in the All-Star game since Mike Piazza did it in 1996. So let me pass it over to my co-host, Jake Reiner. How you doing, Jake? What's going on?
Hey, Kev. The All-Star game, yeah, I like the MLB All-Star game. It's my favorite All-Star game of any of the major sports because I feel like the players are actually playing as close to, if not, as hard as they can play. You see, they've reduced the NFL Pro Bowl to flag football. That doesn't really matter, or it doesn't really count for anything. The NBA All-Star game is just a kind of a layup line type of deal, you know, alley-oops and flashy dunks. And I just feel like with baseball, you can't really just phone it in. I mean, these guys are going to be throwing in the upper 90s, 100 miles an hour, especially for these guys that are just making their first appearances ever, like Paul Skeens, rookie pitcher for the Pirates, who wants to show off his stuff. And of course, the other players on the team, the more veteran guys, are there to show you kind of what they're made of too. And Shohei Ohtani loves a big stage, and he crushed that ball off of Tanner Houck, like just absolutely destroyed it. And the cool part about that home run was that they were in the middle of interviewing Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. They had them mic'd up in the field, and Joe Davis asked Aaron Judge about Shohei Ohtani, and Aaron Judge kind of teed it up perfectly. He was talking about how amazed he is by his talent, how he hits these balls, just these rocket home runs, 115 miles per hour off the bat. And then boom, as soon as he ended his sentence, that's when the ball left the yard. It was a no doubt about it shot. And I thought at that point that the National League was going to go on to win this game. And then Logan Webb happened. he came out and just coughed everything up. And then the National League never scored again. It kind of felt like, Kevin, the last few weeks of what we've been seeing from the Los Angeles Dodgers as we've headed into the All-Star break, where they get a lead or they kind of get either a 1-0 lead or a 3-0 lead. And then the starting pitching is terrible or the bullpen blows it. And that's kind of what we saw in that Tiger series leading into the All-Star break. So yeah, you know, that was the one highlight from the All-Star game that was cool, was the Shohei home run.
I was on record on this podcast and I made my presence felt on social media when I said Logan Webb had no business and didn't deserve to be on this All-Star team. And who pitched like shit and gave up the game? Logan Webb, unironically. That's what happens when these bonehead players and coaches pick the wrong guy, because Gavin Stone should have been on that All-Star roster. He pitched like he deserved it. So karma's a bitch for Logan Webb. So sorry, Logan, you screwed us over. Shocker, Giants fan, Giants player ruining a Dodgers player's glory. Because if this was really based on performance, not win or loss outcome, Shohei Ohtani should have been the All-Star Game MVP. Nobody had a better game than he did. I understand that Jaren Duran hit the go-ahead home run, and so they're going to give it to the winning team. But kind of like Jerry West in the finals all those years ago, where he averaged a monster series and they lost to the Boston Celtics, that was Shohei Ohtani in this game, because he was the best player on the planet. He was the best player in this game. He showed up to the occasion with the bright lights. And just like in the World Baseball Classic, where he dominated in this All-Star game, and he set up the National League for success. Unfortunately, Webb and Hunter Green blew it for us.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to give the MVP to the winning team all the time, so it just sucks. And, you know, Jaren Duran hit a home run. Shohei hit a home run. Both of them, both of those home runs meant that their side took the lead. You got to give it to Duran, because he was the only other one that really performed at a high level. The ball that he hit was absolutely touched. He crushed that ball off Hunter Green. And it seemed, while I was watching it, I kind of was making mental notes in my head not to do the whole like LeBron James, like I predicted this, but I really was thinking this as I was watching Hunter Green pitch, is that they were sitting on it. They kind of knew what was coming, and they were able to hit his fastball, which, if he's not going well, it is very flat and very hittable.
Dodgers have a date with Jaren Duran as well coming up, since he's also a member of the Boston Red Sox. He's having a really good season. Definitely going to be a player to watch out for in this series upcoming. 284 hitter, 819 OPS, 22 stolen bases, 10 home runs, 41 RBIs. Duran, maybe a future Los Angeles Dodger. We have a good track
record. You say that about everybody.
We have a good track record of making trades with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Could happen one day. We're going to need some outfield help. The All-Star weekend was kind of run by the Los Angeles Dodgers. It wasn't just the game, but the night before in the home run derby, finally someone on the Los Angeles Dodgers took home the derby crown. And it was kind of a nerve-wracking one, because Teoscar, I believe, was the last man in after the first round. 19 home runs, I believe, is what he hit. Just beat out the hometown guy, Adolis Garcia, and then everyone else kind of sucked. Pete Alonso was garbage. Jose Ramirez, or who else was there? Gunnar Henderson was a big favorite. He really disappointed. So anyways, Teoscar got in, and it was long. It was a very long derby. I will say that, but Teoscar literally edged out Bobby Witt Jr., who went second in the finale. And if Bobby Witt Jr. was one home run shy of tying Teoscar for, I guess, what would have been a like a shootout or something, but Teoscar won.
Yeah, and he survived two rounds, if you remember, because the previous round it was Alec Bohm, and they had a swing off, and that was pretty epic to see Teoscar hit two of three home runs. That was huge. One home run with three outs to play with three pitches to play with, that's tough to do. But to hit two, you kind of feel like you're in the driving seat. And again, it was like Teoscar just did enough to survive. And that last ball by Bobby Witt Jr. I thought was gone. And it just died on the warning track. And then that was the ultimate win for Teoscar Hernandez. Just a really cool thing to watch. I remember watching that Derby back in 2015 with Jock Peterson and Todd Frazier. And I thought for sure Jock Peterson had that and was going to win it. And Todd Frazier, another hometown guy, it was in Cincinnati. So they had their home player going up against Jock Peterson, and he was able to kind of get the crowd behind him and win that. And then for Bobby Witt, who is a Texas native, I thought the same thing was going to happen with him, but he could not muscle one over the wall, which would have tied it. It wouldn't have, you know, given him the win by any means, but it would have tied it, and they would have had to do another swing off. But I have to say, I do really like this new format that they've put together. I know that the Derby lasts way too long and they need to, you know, shorten that. But the drama of having not only a certain number of pitches, the time, the clock is great. The timeout is really well done, but that you get three additional outs to play with after in the bonus round. And then if you hit one 425, you get an extra out. I thought is great. It's a great kind of dramatic moment because you feel in the initial round, right, when it's timed, there's not really enough time to really appreciate the home run because it's like you got to get back in the box. You got to get back and, you know, ready to swing before you even see where the ball goes. And it's hard to track sometimes. So when you get into that bonus round, and Teoscar used the bonus round beautifully, and it was what propelled him into each round that he got into, is that you get to appreciate each home run. You get to take your time, get set, take the pitches that you want and find the one that you want to swing at. And I just thought that those rules, combining kind of the old way that they used to do it, where it was like you got 10 outs, right? Anything that wasn't a home run was an out, and it wasn't timed, to just only timed home runs, to now you kind of have the combination of the two. I thought the format was great. What did you think?
I thought the first round was about 10 pitches too many, but other than that, I liked the format. It was getting long, but like, why is this a 3-hour event? My goodness.
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
But yeah, the bonus is cool. I know that who was it that like Teoscar, in his first round, he really thrived in that bonus round because I'm pretty sure he was at like 12 or 13. And
that's what I'm saying. He really used it to his advantage.
Yeah, and then he went off, and that was the difference because he just got in. And but yeah, the final was thrown. I always like a home run derby when it comes down to the final pitch.
Yes.
That's what makes it epic.
Well, that's what this format kind of lends itself to, right? Is the drama. There was a lot of drama at the end in these bonus rounds because you have to hit the ball out of the park. Otherwise it's an out and you only have limited amount of opportunities to do that. So the way that they've constructed it is good, but I agree with you. Maybe the time in the first, you know, round when they're, you know, timed needs to be shorter. They need to have less pitches or whatever it is, or fewer breaks in between each hitters. Like, let's get these guys up there and swinging. Another cool part to this was the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. bit, because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. showed up with Teoscar Hernandez's jersey from his days in Toronto. And he was there kind of supporting him. And Teoscar said afterwards how instrumental Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was in calming him down, in providing advice, and being that kind of calming force there for him. And he really, you know, attributes a lot of his success to that, to Dino Ebel. I felt that Dino Ebel did a pretty fine job as the pitcher. People don't give a lot of credit to the pitcher, but that's a huge part of it. If your pitcher is not on, and if they're putting the ball kind of out of where you want it to be, that could ruin your chances of winning this home run derby. So the pitcher and the hitter obviously have to be in sync. Dino Ebel's been around the block for a very long time, and it looked like he and Teoscar were in sync.
I'm surprised no one contacted Noah Syndergaard to be their pitcher. That guy gives up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, that would have been my choice if I were to go up for the home run derby.
Noah Syndergaard on a mission to lose 25 pounds, apparently. Didn't even know he had 25 pounds that he could shed.
Yeah, and but I didn't know that that was the issue.
What's up, chat? Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. But yeah, Teoscar Hernandez walking away with $1 million more in his pocket.
Yeah, and also I think for me, like I know we got to wait till October and see what happens, but from what I'm seeing from Teoscar Hernandez, I would like to see him in Dodger blue for a very long time. I think that if the Dodgers could get it done, they should extend him. We've seen how many holes the Dodgers have in their outfield. So to be able to solidify a guy like that for a long period of time, a guy that likes it here in Los Angeles, does not want to move all over the place, does not want to be a journeyman outfielder. That's something that I think is kind of a match made in heaven. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, look at the Dodgers outfield depth. There's none of it. The only reason I would see the Dodgers maybe not offering him a long-term contract is if they view Teoscar can't play the outfield for the majority remainder of his career and he has to be a DH. That'd probably be the only reason I could be okay with having to let him walk. But if it's a four-year contract and he can play the outfield like he has been, we don't need a lot from him defensively. He just needs to be not a liability out there. Give him the 4-year contract, fifth year club option if they have to, $20 million annually. He deserves it. They should bring him back. We're looking at an outfield right now. If Teoscar, Páez with a question mark, I'm assuming he's part of the long-term plans. And then there's an opening in right field.
I mean, I would love to move Mookie Betts back there if it were up to me. So if you have Teoscar and Mookie in the corners, and then you can maybe figure out center field, whether it's Páez or Outman, or if it's like a Luis Robert, if they end up going to get him or whatever, to have those three guys in the outfield, that's your set right there. So, or Randy Arozarena, right? I mean, that's the other option there. If you're not satisfied with an Outman or a Páez. One other thing I wanted to bring up, Kevin, that was getting a little bit of play online. Some people criticizing some of Teoscar Hernandez's teammates for not sticking around. It appeared that Tyler Glasnow was the only one that kind of stayed throughout the entire event, with Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Shohei Ohtani being there for the beginning, but not there for the end. We did hear from Chelsea Freeman, which is Freddie's wife, who basically said that their kids were getting tired and restless and needed to go to bed. And so that's why Freddie Freeman left. But a lot of people were criticizing his teammates for not sticking around. And while as a fan, obviously you want to see all of your all-stars there from start to finish, it was a very long event. I don't think it's that big of a deal. And it appears, though, that Teoscar kind of knew that and was fine with that, and had the support that he needed there and wanted. So what do you think that's, you know, people are making a mountain out of a molehill here, Kevin, or are you on their side with this?
It's not an issue for me. Don't care. Like I said a couple minutes ago, the event was too long. And it's also 2 hours later in Texas, so for what was 8 p.m. here, I think 10 p.m. out there. People like Shohei Ohtani, I believe he sleeps a lot too. I don't know if that's just part of the Japanese culture, but the Yamamotos, the Kikuchis, and I think Ohtani, like, they sleep more than the average person.
Yeah. So the only one we don't have an excuse for is Will Smith. What a dick.
well, he was playing too. So
I'm only kidding, of course. But yeah, I thought that it was really cool to see a Dodger finally win that event. It's kind of crazy that no Dodgers ever won that.
It is crazy. Moose 1032 saying in the chat, Freddie said his kids were fighting an illness. So
yeah, whether they were sick or tired, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, no one cares about these. No one cares that the Dodgers players went home early. Like, who cares?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It wouldn't be justice if I didn't bring up the real star of the home run derby, though. And it actually happened before first pitch. Ingrid Andres was invited to sing the national anthem, and she made a name for herself. Even though she was a four-time Grammy nominee, which I still have a hard time believing that is the case, but apparently the Grammy committee felt she was worthy enough to have four Grammys, which you can't take back nominations, I guess, but they should definitely take those nomination counts away from her after this disgraceful national anthem that she provided to the, not only the fans of Texas, but all of America, because it was broadcasted. She gave Fergie a run for her money, because I think this rendition of the national anthem was the worst of all time. And I understand that the next day she posted on her social media accounts that she's going to rehab because she performed drunk. That's not an excuse for me. A lot of talented artists sing wasted all the time and they pull it off. I think she's just dog shit, period. And I don't expect her to ever be invited back. I won't ever listen to any music recordings from her, because I'm just going to fly under the assumption now that she's just a terrible singer. And I honestly don't buy. I think the drunk excuse is just an excuse to hide from the fact that she sucks at singing.
Yeah, that's it's a harsh return on her. I think that it was awful as well. I think that it was honestly the worst performance of the national anthem of all time. I think it far surpasses Fergie. It far surpasses Roseanne Barr. If you remember years and years ago where she like spit on home plate, because it felt like that was more of like a, she was trying to do like a bit, like a comedic bit. This was actually a bad, bad performance. And you know, it kind of sucks that she, you know, is going to rehab. And if that is all, you know, true and all of that, then I wish her the best. I hope she gets the recovery that she needs. And it kind of takes away from what I really wanted to say about that performance, because it was really bad. Yeah, I don't know her music. But based on that, I don't know if you can fully blame it on being drunk, because there just was no semblance of hitting the correct note. And then at one point toward the end, she just started inventing notes and inventing parts of the national anthem that I didn't know existed. So it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad all the way around. And if you're going to be on a big stage like that, you got to be better. You just have to.
She's got to be a leading contender right now for Idiot of the Year. We haven't had many idiots this season. It's been a pretty low-key year. Doesn't mean that there won't be more incidents to come.
Yeah, we're only in July, so let's give it some time. Yeah, I hope that you know, the idiot, whoever the Idiot of the Year is an actual idiot and isn't dealing with, you know, the seriousness of alcoholism, because it is very serious. And we can really kind of go in on her. Not that you held anything back, Kevin, but I just feel like I would like to throw my full weight behind someone who's the Idiot of the Year and not feel bad about criticizing them.
Michael Creo saying bad audio feedback. I don't know if that's referring to us or something regarding Ingrid, but unless other people have complaints, I think our audio sounds fine. So I'm going to continue on with the show. That's all I got for All-Star Weekend. once again, it wasn't all that memorable, but at least Shohei Ohtani hit a home run and Teoscar Hernandez was the home run derby winner. But the game itself, to me, never is that memorable. I don't know what they could do to make it more exciting with more offense, but I guess that's the repercussions when you have the best pitchers of the world, minus Logan Webb, invited to the All-Star event.
Yep.
I would love to see these be kind of like a hybrid in between of like the NBA All-Star game where, you know, there is some defense, but at the same time, they're able to showcase the offense.
It's tough though, because it's like how are you changing that? You're telling the pitchers to not pitch as well as they should.
Yeah.
You know,
just nothing we can do, I guess. That's how it goes. All right. Let's transition now to your actual Los Angeles Dodgers. And they couldn't have left the first half on a lower note. Mm. They got walked off on by the Detroit Tigers in back-to-back games. The Detroit Tigers are not a good baseball team. I mean, the Dodgers as a whole have been very sluggish. I don't know why 47 games was the number people are cherry-picking, but they're like 23 in their last 24 out of their last 47. They're like 3-7 in their last 10, and they've just been playing basically 500 ball for almost 2 months now. And a lot of this falls on the pitching because of who's left. And at the same time, the offense is sporadic at times. But I'm going to start with kind of my issues in how these last two games were managed. And I didn't think Dave Roberts did a good job at all. More so in the last game, and I'll explain my issues in the second to last game, but I didn't understand. Going into that game, you have the new Dodger, Brent Honeywell, and we pulled him after three innings or so. He wasn't even that worked. Then they went with Yarbrough, who's just been a stinker. Maybe we'll have a couple minutes to just talk about how bad Yarbrough's been. Mm-hmm. I don't even trust that guy anymore. But then they go to the bullpen, which apparently was very shorthanded. Daniel Hudson's dealing with a back injury. He wasn't available. I don't know why they didn't find a guy to replace him. Evan Phillips, I believe, was down because he blew the save the night before. Blake Treinen had pitched 2 days in a row, so he wasn't available. And then Alex Vesia, they didn't want to use like 4 nights out of 5 nights. So basically half the bullpen wasn't available. So then why use Anthony Bonda for 4 pitches? If we're so shorthanded, why not use Anthony Bonda for more than 4 pitches? And then to go with Johan Ramirez in the 8th inning, I'm cool with it. But then to run him back out there for the 9th inning, that's just asking for trouble.
That's the Michael Grove syndrome right there, where it's like you should be happy and lucky that you got one scoreless inning. Don't then run him back out there for another inning.
Yeah. And he literally threw the game away. And I literally mean that, because he got into some trouble and then there was a runner on third or whatever. And I don't even know what happened. I think the ball got put in play. I think they were bunting on him and he threw the ball at one point and he just didn't even hit it close to third baseman at all. And it went to the backstop, or it went to the
went up the line.
Went up the line on the left field side of the field. And that was the game. And the night before, he freaking got walked off on as well by Gio Urshela, who I think a week ago we talked about him being bad. So, of course, he hits the walk-off home run against us.
Yeah.
But I'm done with Johan Ramirez. Like,
me too. I've seen enough. I've seen enough.
And I feel bad because I feel like they use him every day. Like, I almost feel like every game I watch, there's Johan Ramirez.
Yeah. He's the rubber arm in the bullpen. Every year, Roberts has that guy. Always. It's always a guy that they run out there way too much, like a Pedro Baez or a Michael Grove or Johan Ramirez. He always has that one guy that he always goes to. And it's always a guy that's like not great, can be good at sometimes does get the job done, but most of the time doesn't. And it's a guy that you don't mind using or overusing because you want to save your bullpen. And especially this bullpen this year that has been so not only injured, but old, you're going to have guys that you're going to plug in. And so while I do fault Roberts, maybe in the way in which he, managed the bullpen the way he did in these last couple of games, the bigger issue is that they just don't have enough arms to call upon. And that, I think, is the bigger issue here. Not so much what he did with the relievers, because look, if you have a 9-4 lead in the ninth inning against a bad Tigers team, you should be able to find a pitcher down there that can get you three outs. You have to. And I know he brought in, what was it, Venasco, right?
Yeah.
Who they had just brought up from AAA. I'm sorry, bro. You got to get the job done. We should not have to fire up our closer in that situation. And the fact is that we had to run in our closer because Venasco couldn't get the job done. And then Phillips comes in, blows it, which, you know, is going to happen when you have a closer. That's just going to happen. And especially maybe Phillips wasn't prepared to pitch that day. And this is not a playoff game. So it's not like, you know, you're in a playoff game and you're thinking your mentality is, oh, I'm going to be called upon at a moment's notice and I need to be ready. This was a game in hand, the Dodgers versus the Tigers with a 5-run lead in the ninth inning. That should be a lock win every single time. So while I understand your criticisms of having a guy like Venasco come in or Phillips blowing a game like that, the truth is that these guys have to get the job done and they just haven't. And the problem is that they don't have enough arms. They don't have enough good arms to roll out there right now, because this team is, this bullpen is overworked because the starting rotation is terrible, because they don't have enough starters, because their starting pitching is in shambles. And it's this domino effect that leads to these games that get out of hand quickly at the end.
I don't care that we were up 5 runs. To me, it was still stupid to go with Ricky Venasco in the ninth inning. The guy hadn't pitched at the big league level in nearly 3 months. I think his last appearance prior to that was April 15th. And it's not like he was lights out in AAA either. He was struggling there and he dealt with some injuries. And so, yes, he's technically a major league pitcher at that moment in time, but he's not really a major league pitcher. And when you have professional players up there like the Tigers, even though they have a bad record, 5 runs is not impossible to escape. And clearly they showed that, because Venasco didn't even get a single out. And then maybe Evan Phillips, like you said, was just not mentally ready for that moment. And he blew the game as well. And then it was over from there. But for me, Johan Ramirez is such a fraud. Like, he's 0-5 with, I think, a 4.68 ERA. He's bound to get sent, either DFA'd or sent to the minors soon. But I'm done with him. But yeah, speaking of Evan Phillips, are we starting to get a little worried about him maybe retaining the role as the Dodgers closer?
No, I'm not. I think that they're just overworked. And it's, you know, Phillips is fine. I mean, he's had a few moments where he's blown up. Trinan's had a few moments where he's blown up. Daniel Hudson has had a few moments where he's blown up. I mean, this just happens when you're a reliever. And the fact that Phillips has been this good for this long is actually a miracle, because of where the Dodgers found him originally, which was, you know, he was DFA'd. Was it DFA'd by the Orioles? I think it was. Like, he was on the scrap heap. He had no business being an elite reliever for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's what he turned out to be. So I'm going to give him all the benefit of the doubt that we can give him right now, and hope that the Dodgers can add a couple of relievers at the deadline, because they really do need it. Whether or not you have Phillips as the closer or not, or it's a closer by committee kind of thing, which they've kind of been doing a little bit, because you've seen Vesia close, you've seen Hudson close, you've seen Trinan close. Phillips gets the majority of the opportunities, but this is a bullpen by committee kind of deal. So they definitely need more relievers, and that's the issue, I think, rather than being worried about Evan Phillips.
Small sample size, but in the month of July, Evan Phillips has given up 3 home runs, has a 7.20 ERA across 5 innings thrown, and the opposition's hitting .286 against him. 6 strikeouts, 5 innings. Hasn't been the dominant Evan Phillips that we're accustomed to seeing. Maybe he's just in a little bit of a rut and he'll get out of it. Maybe it's the lingering effects of that hamstring injury he had earlier this year that caused him to miss some time. But if I'm the Los Angeles Dodgers, I am frantically scouting the relief market right now because I don't trust this bullpen fully like I have in years past. For once, I think we have a decent amount of holes, and Yarbrough is a big hole. Johan Ramirez is a giant donut hole. And then they just sent down Michael Peterson. So it sounds like Joe Kelly is about to be activated, but you never know what version of Joe Kelly you're going to get. He's kind of the biggest wild card of all the relievers on this Dodgers pen. And then, yeah, I mean, it's been a cycle. They've just added a Honeywell, but who knows if he pitches well. He's been tossed around for the majority of his big league career. I don't expect him to stick around for the long time being. And then Brazier sucks, and Gratterall is supposed to start to come back, but
are we ever going to see Gratterall?
He's beginning to enter rehab phase and ramp up. So could be a few weeks, maybe August, but yeah, he should be back by August, I think.
I see someone in the chat, Oscar Vargas, who we know. He says Ramirez has a 2.88 ERA, a 1.16 WHIP, and blah 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 in his last 22 appearances. A 2.88 ERA. I'm looking at his stats right now. I don't see that. I see in the last 7 games he's got a 4.91 ERA. His last 15 games, he's got a 3.94 ERA. And overall, he's got a 4.68 ERA. He's bad.
Yeah, during his Los Angeles Dodgers tenure, he's got a 3.54 ERA, a 4.27 FIP, and nearly a 1.2 WHIP. So that's just cherry picking right there. You look at the entire sample size of Johan Ramirez, he's not good. And they're going to get rid of him. Maybe no team will claim him and they can really revamp him in the minors and we'll work him out for 2025, or he comes back later this year and he can be a Yency Almonte. But for the time being, I don't trust Johan Ramirez. Throw him in the garbage can. I'm done with him.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is they just don't have enough. They don't have enough healthy arms. And so it's like, who else are you going to bring up unless you make trades? I mean, that's what they have to do. The way the bullpen is currently constructed is not sustainable for the rest of the season. And when you think about October, you know, with this old bullpen that we have, it's very suspect. It really is at this point.
It's a good question coming from Trey B. So I think this is the perfect transition to the next topic I wanted to cover. But before we do that, let me take a quick pause right here to talk about our sponsor, TickPick. Second half baseball is about to be underway, and if you're looking for some tickets to see your Los Angeles Dodgers, then look no further than to download the TickPick app, because the Los Angeles Dodgers have some very exciting series coming up. I don't even remember the last time the Boston Red Sox were in town besides the 2018 World Series, but if you want to see Red Sox-Dodgers battle it out, go get some tickets on the TickPick app. If you're trying to go see some concerts, you can pretty much look up any artist that you're a fan of. Maybe even Ingrid Andress when she comes back from rehab. You can go download the app and see her in person. But yeah, TickPick's awesome. No service fees at checkout. And I'm excited for this Dodgers second half. I really do like that we kick it off with Boston right away. We'll get to see Kenley Jansen maybe close it out. And then the Dodgers got a big series against the San Francisco Giants, who are on the cusp of being sellers. And rumor has it that Farhan Zaidi will be fired if the Giants don't make the playoffs.
As they should. I mean, I don't know what he's done there that's warranted more time with the organization.
So yeah, Justin Yamas said the last time Boston played LA was 2016. I was there for a regular season game, but obviously they played in the World Series. So 2018 was the last time they were here. Okay. So Trey B, is there a relief pitcher you'd want from the Detroit Tigers? If we go all in on Tarik Skubal, try to get a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher in one trade, maybe.
I don't know. Do you know their bullpen? Cause I don't.
I mean, I just saw them in the series and no one on that bullpen really impressed me.
Yeah.
I don't think I want any of their relievers, but
Kenta Maeda.
I actually did hear that could be a throw-in. He's been bad. Of course, he dicked us down, but I think I'm good.
Yeah, we know the secret sauce for Kenta is that bullpen role.
True.
We've seen it before and it's worked wonders.
Anyways, the big name here is Tarek Skubal. I've talked about him at a nauseating fashion at this point, but the rumors are starting to look real. Tom Verducci, I think Jim Bowden, John Morosi, and myself, an unofficial insider that doesn't really have any intel, are all saying that the Dodgers actually are trying to pursue this trade for Skubal. And basically what would get it done is that the Tigers would need to kind of get a Juan Soto-like package in return, which to me seems like an overpay. And I don't buy that. I don't think it would cost as much as what Juan Soto fetched when the Nationals shipped him to the Padres. But I do think it would be a lot. And I do think that the Dodgers and the Orioles are two teams that legitimately could get this trade done if they're serious about going all in on.
I mean, yeah, if they could have, if they have the right package, you got to get him. I mean, it's because it's not, because you're not just making a trade for this season, right? It's not like a Max Scherzer rental type of deal where you need them for a playoff run. Obviously, you'd need Tarek Skubal for a playoff run because the Dodgers are so thin at starting pitching, and he is an ace type pitcher that you'd want starting a playoff game for you. But he's in his mid 20s right now, and this is a trade for the future. And to be able to put Tarek Skubal in this rotation along with Glasnow and Yamamoto, and hopefully Bobby Miller comes back, and maybe by a stroke of luck, Walker Buehler figures it out. I mean, we're talking about a pretty elite Gavin Stone, a pretty elite starting pitching for the future. So this is a play not only for now, but for later as well.
We just saw Tarek Skubal pitch against the Dodgers firsthand, and he was throwing 100 miles per hour against us. We haven't had a dominant lefty that was throwing that hard since Clayton Kershaw. And I think that to have a dominant lefty like this would match really well with Glasnow and Yamamoto. If you had that three with pick your order, maybe Glasnow goes game one, Skubal goes game two, and Yamamoto goes game three, your game two starter would have a 2.41 ERA, 140 strikeouts, over 116 innings thrown, and an 0.88 whip from Skubal. And like you were saying, Jake, this wouldn't be just for this year. We'd have him for two more years. So if it takes Josue DePaula, River Ryan, Diego Cartaya, Dalton Rushing, 20 first-round draft picks, I'm all in. I'll even throw in my left nut if I have to, because I would do pretty much anything it takes to have Skubal in this rotation.
Yeah.
It's hard to think that the Tigers would be willing to trade him because of how awesome he is, but there is a chance.
I just love the idea of the Tigers receiving your left nut and being like, what do we do with this? Kevin Klein's left nut. I we didn't even want a left nut. Why are we getting his? Is kind of the reaction I think that they would have. But I get your point. They shouldn't. I don't think they should mortgage the entire farm for Skubal, because I feel like there are some players in this farm system that are worth holding on to. And if you've followed the Dodgers at all since in this Andrew Friedman era, they've really not overpaid for any one player. And this, it would have to be the right move. And unfortunately the Dodgers are kind of hamstrung by this tax of everyone not wanting to provide them with elite talent and hiking the price up so that the Dodgers will overpay for a player. So it'll be interesting to see how many prospects from this farm system get dealt at the deadline, because the Dodgers just have so many different holes to fill.
I'm kind of tired of just waiting on these position players, because more often than not these days, they just don't pan out. So if we can sell high on them, I'm for it. And if we have to eat a bad contract like Javier Baez to get this done, do it. Just pay the money. At this point, Javier Baez wouldn't be a downgrade to the Dodgers bench. He wouldn't really be an upgrade, but I mean, he's basically on par with what Kike Hernandez is doing. if you got to get rid of Gavin Lux, then I think Javier Baez is honestly an upgrade over Gavin Lux at this point. And he can play shortstop. He can play second base. He can probably play third base. He'd be a bad contract, and maybe the Dodgers just decide to outright eat the money and release him. But that's where I stand. Any other final thoughts on Skuball?
No, I would love to see him in Dodger blue.
So next up, of course, the super chat. Sorry for making you wait, Moose 1032. I really do appreciate the super chats, and this looks like it's going to be a fun one. Does it feel like we have too many holes to fill, or is it just me? Also, how good do you think Ryan is going to be? So this is actually was the next thing I wanted to talk about. Rumor has it the Dodgers are planning to call up and add River Ryan to the Dodgers starting rotation. He might be starting Sunday, Monday, or maybe even Tuesday for the Dodgers. And some pipelines are ranking him as the Dodgers' top pitching prospect right now. And just for a little context of what River Ryan has done so far in the minors this year, 8 starts, 2.22 ERA, 32 strikeouts over 24 innings thrown.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, the Dodgers have so much pitching depth that you're going to see guys be dealt at the deadline that, you know, and honestly still have great talent left over. So I'm excited to see him come up. And often what happens, you know, nowadays that the Dodgers are so injured is that you'll have guys from the minors come up and pitch. And it's almost like an audition tape for scouts around the league to see what these guys can bring at the major league level. And so that's what you've seen with Robleski and what you're going to see with River Ryan. That's what you've seen with Landon Knack too. So I'll be excited to see what River Ryan, cause I haven't really watched him or really followed him that much. So to see him up at the big league level would be great.
Someone just crashed the podcast. Just kidding. He was invited. Chris Camello stopping by. What's going on, Chris? You came in at a time where we're actually talking about River Ryan potentially making his Dodgers debut.
Yeah, I thought I'd catch the last bit of your guys' show. Great stuff as always, and appreciate the wedding crasher, the podcast crasher. You know, so move over Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. So here I am to do that. River Ryan. I've been hearing a lot about him and. Obviously another one of those highly touted prospects with the pitching depth down in the minors that Jake was just talking about. And at this point, you know, this could work one of two ways. This could work out where you see the potential and now you want to hold on to him, or this backfires and now the value takes a hit like some of these other guys' values has taken hit. Vargas, Outman, you know, some of those guys are not as I would say, as valuable now in a trade if you want to get a guy like Skuball. So you have to kind of be careful when you feature these guys at the major league level, because if they get smacked around, that value potentially could take a hit. And Skuball, Detroit's going to want a lot for him. But there is a door number two in that trade. And I don't know if you guys touched on this. Would you guys be willing to take back a contract in addition to Skuball in order to lessen the blow of some of these more valuable prospects like a Javi Baez, a Mark Canha, somebody along those lines?
Yeah, we talked about that, and I think we're in agreement that we would absorb a contract like that.
Yeah, and Baez obviously definitely a shell of what he once was with the Cubs, perennial Dodger killer, as you guys knew for a long time when the Cubs were, you know, in World Series contention, obviously won a championship in 2016. He was a big part of that. 3 years and I think, what, $80 million still left on that contract. That's a lot. But at horrific. The same point in time, could be a stopgap shortstop, could be somebody that you could even put at second base. Remember, the Mets put him at second base next to Lindor. He wasn't horrible at that. And you certainly could get more, at least pop, from the second base position with Baez than you could with Lux. So if that's the price to get Skuball, I don't know. I think that might be your best bet rather than mortgaging the farm. That's just me, though.
I want to touch on the other part of this question, which is, does it feel like we have too many holes to fill?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go too.
And I don't think we have too many holes to fill, because I believe that the Dodgers have the resources available to make multiple trades, and I think that they will. But the priority has to be starting pitching, because as we know, going into the postseason, that matters. And the past couple seasons, the Dodgers have been very thin at starting pitching, and it has really hurt them. So that has to be the priority with the amount of injuries that they have and the amount of question marks that they have with guys like Yamamoto and Kershaw and all those guys coming back, Bobby Miller among them.
Yeah, so let's... go ahead.
I was just going to say is that while I would like an outfielder, right, like a Randy Arozarena, and while I would like bullpen help, the focus has to be starting pitching, because you got to think that even if the Dodgers don't make an upgrade offensively, which I think they desperately do because that bottom of the order is very, very bad, they can score enough runs if Max Muncy and Mookie Betts come back. Just that offense in and of itself has enough firepower to score runs. And if they can't score runs with that lineup, then I don't know what. So they should be okay with that if they wanted to just focus on pitching. So I don't believe they have too many holes, but there are a lot of holes on this team.
I think the holes are replaceable and they can be filled. So I wanted to explore some of these holes real quick. In the outfield, you've got Teoscar. He's a lock. Andy Páez, he's a rookie. He has his good days. He has his bad days. Sometimes he just looks completely lost out there in center field. So maybe if I were to make a move for the Dodgers, it might be to try to find someone that can handle that position a little better. If not, then you get a corner outfielder like the Randy Arozarena type, and you just run with it. But I do think the Dodgers have to get an outfielder. That's secondary behind starting pitching in terms of needs. Infield, obviously, we've got Freddie Freeman. That's not a hole. Shortstop, kind of a hole, arguably, but you've got Miguel Rojas and possibly Mookie Betts, depending on where they're going to play him.
Yeah.
Second base is a massive hole. This is the one position you have to replace. Get Gavin Lux off the team, demote him, whatever. He's the one starter that's actually bringing this Dodgers team down. Third base is a hole in the meantime until Max Muncy comes back. If the Dodgers view themselves in a spot where Max Muncy can't come back, then they have to go out there and trade for a third baseman. Then that becomes a big priority, probably even above outfielders. And then obviously the catching position's fine. In terms of the rotation, there are a lot of holes, but Glasnow will be coming back almost immediately after the All-Star break. Yamamoto's on the 60-day IL, and he might not be back until early September if we're lucky, but they do seem to think there's trends in optimism in terms of his progression. But it's the Dodgers, and you never know. Bobby Miller's in AAA. We'll see what happens with him. Walker Buehler is on the injured list and isn't even working with the Dodgers medical staff. He kind of ghosted them. And then Clayton Kershaw just threw a rehab start in AAA, and they seem really optimistic on Kershaw coming back. He might only need one more rehab start, and then they're willing to activate him off the injured list and add him to this Dodgers rotation. And then we talked about the bullpen at length, so I'm good there.
I would say the wish list at this point, I know everyone, you know, Jake, you're talking bullpen and I get it, but if you can get Brazier back, Joe Kelly and Brewster Gratterall, that's a big influx right there. Just saying,
guys are so uncertain. You know what I mean? Like,
I hear you, but I also don't think that should be super high on the priority list. And by the way, I am not so gung-ho about this Kenley Jansen reunion idea. I know people are nostalgic. He had his best years with the Dodgers, no question about it. But I am also not super keen on it. I think you need two bats and two starters. One that could play the outfield, at least. One that could potentially play third base. And then, of course, you not only need a high-end frontline starter that you could use for the now and the later, but another veteran innings eater. And I know, you know, Kev likes to make fun of me for this idea, but Tyler Anderson, who didn't pitch yesterday in the All-Star game, would be a welcomed addition because you know what you're going to get. And he's got familiarity with the Dodger catchers. He's got familiarity with the Dodger pitching coaches. And he got his career back on track. Why? Because he was with the Dodgers. Not to mention, he's not a rental either. You would have him for at least one more year going into next year. Now, I don't know if that year is guaranteed. I think it is. But I'm just saying, if you can get a screwball or a Crochet and a Tyler Anderson, that shores up your rotation. If you can get an outfielder that, you know, like in Rosarena, to be honest, can I tell you the guy I like from TB? Isaac Paredes, the third baseman. I think that really solves a few, those two guys solve your issues as far as the offense and the defensive flexibility.
Yeah. Just, I mean, if you go out and get an Isak Paredes or a Luis Renifo, which is another guy that I've been banging my fist on the table for, and you package, like, you know, Luis Renifo and a Tyler Anderson, or Luis Renifo and a Carlos Estevez, even, that's a package that I would love. If you were to get a Skubal or a Randy or Rosarena, I mean, there's so many different, you know, combinations of players that I would accept, and that would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. Michael Carrillo pointing out Tyler Anderson has a 460 FIP. Just an FYI. I'm fine with Tyler Anderson.
The thing about Tyler Anderson is that it's like you're getting Tarek Skubal for the postseason, right? You're getting Tyler Anderson because you need fucking starting pitching. And you need
That's what I've been saying.
You need to get to the end of the road here, and he's a durable starter.
If Tyler Anderson is the secondary starter in a trade, I'm okay with that. But if that's the only guy the Dodgers get, I'm going to be furious.
Oh, yeah. No, if that's the only guy they get, then what are we doing?
Yeah. I do not want a repeat of last year where we trade for a bunch of scraps and then they look like dog shit in the postseason. That's not going to fly.
Question. Are the Mets going to – two questions, actually. Are the Mets going to be sellers in your guys' opinion? And two, would they consider trading Jose Quintana?
The Mets are a wild card team, I believe, as it currently stands.
They've turned it around.
Okay.
They would have to free fall in the next 2 weeks.
Which is possible. They are the Mets.
Yeah.
I want to open up to our chat. If you have any questions right now, we'll do a quick rapid fire of Q&A since we're heading down the home stretch of the show. So feel free to drop your questions below in the chat and we'll make sure to get to them. If you haven't hit that like button yet, please do so. And if you're not subscribing, then why the hell are you here? Or hit that subscribe button, please. I don't really have any additional thoughts right now on the Dodgers trade deadline. There hasn't really been anything too new that I feel like has been reported. We've got the talks of Crochet. We'll see what happens there. Skubal, which apparently is gaining a teeny bit of momentum. Randy Arozarena, another name that the Dodgers are linked to. Paredes, potentially. I've heard that as well. And then, yeah, the Tyler Anderson. I haven't directly heard the Dodgers reaching out about Tyler Anderson, but it wouldn't surprise me, I guess, if that were to happen.
And also, did you guys cover Eric Fede from the Chicago White Sox?
I've talked about him before, but I haven't heard a rumor yet.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up your boy Finnegan, Chris.
Kyle Finnegan, the all-star. Yeah. I've been a fan of his, and he's been a tough closer. I mean, not all of his saves have been dominant. I think he blew one going into the all-star break, but that's a damn good closer, man. And if you could bring him in at the very least as a fireman role, if they're more comfortable keeping Evan Phillips in the closer role, which I know, Jake, you're more of a fan of him being in that firefighter role, then yeah, Finnegan, I think, is a little bit more attainable than somebody like Kenley Jansen, because I think Boston, you know, I don't think Boston's going anywhere. Boston may just go in on the wild card at this point and decide to, if not be buyers, certainly not be sellers. And there is a difference.
I want Boston to give us Kenley Jansen. Said it, Chris. We need a closer, and Kenley Jansen would be ideal.
If he comes, I won't exactly be upset. I just don't think that should be the frontline priority, guys. That's all I'm saying. Go out, shore up the rotation, shore up the offense, because those are two areas that need to be addressed. And by the way, Mark Canha, I'm going to throw that name out there. That is a solid piece right there if you're going to make a deal with Detroit. I think a throw-in in these deals are going to be just as valuable as the actual centerpiece of the deal. That's just me. All on Trey Turner 2021.
Yeah, Canha feels like an A.J. Pollock type of guy.
A little bit better, though.
Like could be valuable.
What about Jesse Winker, who Michael Carrillo is asking us about? Thoughts on Jesse Winker, who's hitting 260 with a 374 on base and an 806 OPS with 11 home runs and 43 RBIs.
He certainly had a resurgence this year, because I remember last year for Milwaukee, he only played 61 games, so he was hurt, but he batted 199 with one home run. So this has been a massive improvement to last season. And that on base percentage you just read, Kevin, that's pretty impressive. I would be down to have him on this team, but I think that it would have to be not a priority to get him. But if you were to get like a Finnegan and a Winker, like then we're talking, you know, like a lot of these outfielders, these corner outfielders that we're talking about are throw-ins, unless you go after the prize possession, which is Randy Arozarena, that I would make a priority if we're serious about him.
And I think Arozarena could also be a future piece for the Dodgers as well. I think that's a guy that you would want to consider keeping in LA for a period of time. That guy would sell tickets. He's fun to watch. He's a gamer. And that could be the type of edge that the Dodgers need on this roster. I know they like their collection of aw shucks good guys, but you need somebody who's not going to, you know, shy away from the moment and not run away from the fire in October. So, but I like Winker. Winker's solid. He's having a really solid year.
I'm indifferent on the move right now. I wouldn't hate it, but I wouldn't exactly be jumping in the air. I kind of think we kind of need to brace ourselves for the Padres potentially trading for Garrett Crochet. And so I think the Dodgers' only response really is to naturally add a right-handed bat. And I know Jake mentioned him a week or two ago, and I'm trying to figure out where he stands defensively. Yeah, he can play. Yeah, so he's been mostly a DH this year, so it might not work out, but Brent Rooker would be a really good add.
Yeah, I love Brent Rooker, and he's a young talent and someone that, again, you could keep for a long period of time. He's got great pop. I mean, he's the only thing that is kind of a drawback with him is that he's unproven and untested, but you know, he's one of the guys that I would love to see in Dodger blue, because the Dodgers can make a lot of trades at this deadline that will help them through next season. So I think they're going to be looking, you know, kind of to upgrade their roster for the future too, which I think is really important.
Yeah, I like Rooker, and the only team I've heard linked to him so far, and obviously things are going to change soon, is the Philadelphia Phillies. So you could be battling them if you're that interested in a guy like Brent Rooker.
Very true. Can you guys do a redraft of past Dodgers drafts from Michael Carrillo?
Oh my God.
I wouldn't know what year or what to start with, Michael. A redraft. Like,
yeah, because we all have a ton of time of our hands, Michael.
Yeah, I would take Jaime Jaquez over Jalen Hood-Schifino is what I would do.
Ditto. Or Pojemski over
right, right. Or him.
Or him.
So, I was trying to figure out what year. Is it the 2019 MLB draft? Let me just see if I can pull
Cody this. Hosey.
Yeah, so the Dodgers took Cody Hosey 25th overall in the first round, and then they took Michael Busch 31st overall in the compensation round. But if we had a redo, he went in round 2 overall, pick 42. The Baltimore Orioles selected Gunnar Henderson, a shortstop out of John T. Morgan Academy. I think if I was to have one redo right now, that would be it.
Yeah.
And we kind of need a shortstop. Just a little.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, I know Chris came late. Was there anything you wanted to talk about real quick, Chris, before we close out the show?
No, just kind of be open-minded. And I honestly think getting healthy and getting good solid pieces is going to be the key if you can't hit that big home run, because there's a chance you might not. You might not be able to get Crochet. You might not be able to get Screwball. You might not be able to get Rosarena. But you got to get something to shore up some of these holes where you're almost banking on change of scenery guys. Guys that maybe struggling a bit or maybe middle of the road, but if they come to LA, they might be able to make more of a profound impact. So, you know, shoot for the moon, land among the stars. That's my theory right now. And I'm sure, and that's always been the theory of Andrew Friedman. He won't just sit back and do nothing. And I think the health status and timelines is also going to be key for guys like Muncy and Betts and Yamamoto. That could also dictate where this trade deadline goes.
Anything, Jake, you wanted to cover topics that I didn't get to?
No. Oh, actually, yeah. Actually, I did have one thing that I wanted to throw at you guys before we wrap. I've been listening to Dodger talk the past couple of days, and Vasse had John Smoltz on, and he had Jake Peavy on different days, and it was kind of interesting listening to these guys in the way in which they view the game now. And obviously, Smoltz is kind of notorious for being like an anti-analytics guy. Because he came from a different era. Jake Peavy came from a similar era where it was like you rode the hot hand, and if a pitcher was going well in the postseason, you wouldn't take him out like they do now, where it's like third time through the order. And Smoltz actually made a really good point, which was the analytics do work, right? We've seen them work. We know that there are advantages and disadvantages to using them. And what his point was is that they work for the regular season. They work for the long haul. They work for the big sample size of, you know, some days it's going to work, some days it isn't. But over the course of 162, using the analytics are going to work more than they're not going to work, just based on the percentages of things. But in the postseason, it's a completely different animal. And what I've been talking about the entire season is that the Dodgers need to change their approach at some point. They need to figure out ways to score runs that isn't by the three-run homer or just by the home run in general. And that also goes with pitching too. It's like third time through the order. Yeah. Okay, fine. You're going to see, you know, a dip in ERA and performance a third time through the order, but maybe let's keep that starter in a little bit longer in the postseason. Maybe the other team that hasn't been able to figure out a Tyler Anderson is relieved to see you take him out of the game and bring in someone else that has a different look. They're waiting for that. I just hope that the Dodgers are able to weather the storm in the postseason and figure out ways to score and win games without the style of play that they've been doing this entire regular season. And I just wanted to kind of throw it to you guys to see what you thought about analytics versus, you know, in the regular season versus the postseason.
There's some conflicts. Because whenever Dave Roberts says he's going with his gut, that's when the worst moments happen in Dodgers history. And there are times where they're so analytically focused, and then Dave Roberts goes with his gut and it completely backfires. So I don't exactly know what we do here in terms of commitment. Do we go with the eye test? And if a pitcher is dealing, do you keep him in? Or do you, for once, just try to stick to a full analytical game plan and just hope that the computer and the nerds come through for the Dodgers? This isn't going to even come down to analytics probably for the Dodgers this upcoming postseason. It's just going to come down to actually small ball, putting the ball in play, actually coming through with runners in scoring position. They're not going to win if they're all swinging for the fence. The Dodgers need to get creative here for once and actually find ways to manufacture runs and kind of do what most great teams do, which is find ways to score when you need it and not play a selfish type of style where everyone's trying to hit the home run and look like a hero.
Yeah, it has to be a balance of both, I think, because it can't just be one or the other. But the problem a lot of the time is that it is one way or the other. It is just analytics. And Dave Roberts does have that emotional part of him where he wants his players to have the moment as opposed to making the right decision. So it is very tricky, but this Dodgers team is so analytically built and driven that it scares me as we get closer to the postseason, because as we've seen the last few seasons, it has just not worked out.
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, it's a balance of both. You know, anybody will tell you, Joe Maddon, Bruce Bochy even, you know, Brian Snicker, any of these guys who've won World Series in recent years, even Dusty Baker. Of course, they look at numbers, but there is a time where you have to trust your gut. You have to trust your players, and you have to also trust where guys are at, where guys are trending. Is a guy hot? Is a guy not, you know, that's the sort of thing. And then in the process, you throw a curveball and you trust the guy. I go back to 2012, Barry Zito one of the worst signings in Giants history, had one of the biggest starts in Giants history. Bruce Bochy threw a curveball that Mike Matheny's St. Louis Cardinals were not ready for in the NLCS, and that changed the trajectory of the series and ultimately got the Giants into the World Series, and then of course, they swept Detroit. So it really is just pressing the right buttons at the right time. There's no science to it. There's not even really trusting an eye test. It's just putting the right guys in the best position and hoping for the best. So hopefully that will happen for the Dodgers. But as you said, Jake, it hasn't happened over the last 3 years.
I just want them to change their approach so badly. I want to play small ball. I want to fucking score runs. That's what I want. And
it's not about changing as much as it is tweaking, as much as it is balancing out.
Sure.
Not
whatever,
relying one way
whatever
or another.
Verb you want to use. I just hope that it's different.
Okay. I hear you, man. I'm with you. Hey, you ain't the only one that's throwing a shoe at the TV during game 5 of the NLDS. Believe me.
Barry Zito. What a throwback.
That was just an example.
It was a good example. That guy was lights out in the postseason. I'm looking up his reference page right now. 283 postseason ERA. Guy was a dog.
For sure. And all was forgiven because he won that one big start at St. Louis in 2012. And Tim McCarver said that. If he does a great job tonight, is all forgiven for all the bad years he had in Frisco.
Nice impersonation. We'll need more of those in the future. I think I've covered everything. For the listeners out there, I'm definitely planning to ramp up the show in the next couple weeks as this trade deadline really heats up. Going to try to reach out to some insiders or experts and get them on the podcast and see what kind of Dodgers rumors we have out there. So stay tuned for that. I'll come through and make it happen for you guys. In the meantime, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on the audio feed, leave us a 5-star review. We just got one of those recently. So shout out to that listener who left us the 5-star review. Jake knows who that is.
Yes.
And personal announcement here is that I've been working hard the last 7 months or so to get a certified financial planner certificate. And mission accomplished. I am now a CFP.
Woohoo! Congrats.
That's great, Kev. Congrats.
That's the show, folks. Everyone have a great rest of your week. We'll be back covering second half Dodgers baseball.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.